Good to see everybody. We're going to be looking at our text in 1 John chapter 2, verse 15 to 17. Loving the world and the things that are in the world is what hinders us from serving God faithfully to the best of our ability. And so we want to consider this text to see what we can learn and what we can do about that. Last week when we studied from the book of Hosea, we noted that there are things that cause shallow faithfulness, and our affections, when they are directed towards ourself or self-interest, and God is coming in second, maybe third or fourth place, then as we noted at that time, there is a problem. Of course, this lesson also kind of conveys that same thought. The first epistle of John directs our attention to three things that draw us away from our Father in heaven, because they're not of Him, they are of the world. It is not of the Father, but is of the world. And so we want to talk about not loving the world. I've titled the lesson, Do Not Love the World. And so as we consider this text, I hope that it'll help us to understand what the Apostle John is saying, and also we can talk through some things that will help us that we do not love the world above the things that are God's. We have to, I think, begin by defining the word world. What does the word world mean? Because that word can be used a number of ways. If we think about the world, we can think about creation itself. We can think about earth and the world as a physical object. But in our context, the word world is representing the whole circle of our earthly goods, our riches, our advantages, our pleasures. And although they are fleeting, the things that stir up our desires and draw us away from God and hinder the cause of Christ is what we're talking about when we think about the world. Those things that represent not the physical world, but things of the world, and it may be physical things, that stir up these desires and draw our attention away from God. So the world stands in opposition to God, against God. So in that sense, we're talking about natural acts or things that accentuate temporal things, things that are earthly, things that are carnal. So it is that which is opposite of spiritual. So the world can represent things that are earthly or carnal or sensual. And so that's how John is using this. He's not talking about the physical planet or creation in that type of way. It's rather talking about the things that we can be endeared to, we can be drawn to. Paul highlights the challenges that we're talking about over in Romans chapter 8 when he talks about the challenge that takes place between the spiritual mind and the carnal mind. And he lays out in verse 6, for the carnal to be carnally minded is death, but to be spiritually minded is life and peace, because the carnal mind is enmity against God, for it is not subject to the law of God, nor indeed can be, for then those who are in the flesh cannot please God. So I think that helps us understand when a Christian has a love or a draw to the world, not in a good sense, but in a bad sense, what it's saying is that we have set our affections, we have set our thoughts upon things that are not of our Heavenly Father and are truly against Him, which is what John goes on to say in our text in John chapter 2. So if we love the world, it says in verse 15 that the love of the Father is not in us or not in you. So that's very serious. If I have a love for the world, then it says, then I don't have the type of love that I need to have for God. Then, you know, that's why we need to examine passages like this. Agape love is the word that is used here, and that's a very strong love. Husbands, love your wife, agape love. love the Lord thy God with all of your heart, agape love. This love is a love that involves our affections, and our affections and where our love is directed reveals what is most important to us. And we truly can say it's what I care about. That's where my love is directed. The things that we really like, that's where our love is directed. And that's why Jesus could say in Matthew chapter 6 and verse 21, he would say, for where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. That's why he could say that, because he basically, that's why we say, well, you find out what your interests are and where you put all your affections and all your energies, and then you begin to see, well, what do you truly love? What is it that your affections are wrapped around? And it can. There's nothing wrong in, you know, things that we enjoy doing, hobbies and things like that. But if that's where all of our interest and all of our love is directed, and that is before God, then there is a problem. And so we have to consider, what do we like to do? What do we care most about? Because that's what shapes our daily activities. That's what shapes our actions. Kind of in a humorous way, I'll tell on Lisa. She doesn't know I'm going to do this, but she's crafting a lot right now. She's doing a lot of sewing, a lot of beautiful things that she's making, a lot of neat things that she's making. Well, Kenzie's kind of doing the same thing. So they came across like a meme. And I think the meme went something along the lines of work and housework and everything else just is getting in the way of crafting. You know, that's exactly what happens. You know, you can let something consume you that everything else becomes like, I don't want to do that, and so I'm going to spend all my time doing this. Well, that's what John is touching on when he talks about love not the world, because if you love the world in the way that we're going to be discussing, then he says the love of the Father is not in you. John is addressing a heart that is really getting to what is, like we say, the rubber meets the road. Because what he does is he lays before us two options. I think that's very important that we understand that we either love the world or we love the Father. Not three things, not a bunch of things, not a lot of gray areas. Man likes to kind of muddy everything by blurring what is known to be clearly true. Light, darkness, good, evil, righteousness, unrighteousness, love of the world versus love of the Father. And somehow we want to try to make that blur to where there's other options, or I can lean one direction or the other, but that's not the way that John presents this at all. There isn't all this gray area, all this mud. What it comes down to is a love for the world or a love for the Father. And if you try to acknowledge both, if you look at Matthew chapter 6 and verse 24, this is why Jesus would say, well, no man can serve two masters, because either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will despise the one and despise the other, or be loyal to the one. You cannot serve God and mammon. And so that, even then, it's like this, it's either or, it's two options. And we try to say, well, I can straddle the fence and I can do both. But the Bible just simply does not present that idea. And so what that is that you've got to make a choice. What kind of choice will I make? Will I love the world or will I love the Father? Will I serve God or will I serve men? Will I have a spiritual mind or will I have a carnal mind? As we've looked at a couple of other passages. Well, to help us make the right choice, John identifies three areas where we can have our affections directed to, which are going to inhibit, or it's going to cause problems, or it's going to show that our affections are in the wrong direction, and we're going to have problems. So he uses three things that are not from the Heavenly Father, but are from the world. And we need to know what they are. This is something that this passage is not new to us. It is one we're familiar with, but it is one that we need to know and we need to have before us to put things first in our lives. So of the three things, he says that these things are not of the Father. Lust of the flesh. Well, how is the word lust used by the Apostle John? Well, lust in and of itself can just mean a desire or a craving. But we usually don't say, I lust after cheesecake. I'm craving some cheesecake. Because lust, and rightfully so, biblically has this negative connotation or definition to it. And so the word lust is a craving or a desire. But if you look up what that Greek word meant, it is a lust or a craving for that which is forbidden, that which is forbidden by God, within the law of God. And so any type of unlawful desire, lust, any type of unlawful craving, if that comes to the forefront of our mind, and then we're tempted to act upon that, or we are enticed, we're using language there from James chapter 1. So if you want to just flip back to James chapter 1 and look there at verse 14. You know, we're talking about, okay, now I've got this desire, craving that's forbidden, and now I'm going to have to make a choice. It's good for us to recognize up front what James says then. He says, for each one is tempted, verse 14, James 1, when he is drawn away by his own desires and enticed. Then when desire has conceived, it gives birth to sin, and sin, when it is full grown, brings forth death. Do not be deceived, my beloved brethren. So we need to recognize there in James chapter 1 and verse 14 to 15 that when we fail to shut down these thoughts that then we act upon, these desires, he says, then that's sin. And that's what brings about spiritual death. Well, if we love the world more than we love the Father, then we're going to succumb. So that first battle of lust concerning the flesh is lust that involves the desires of man that are earthly. When we think about flesh, we are thinking about sensual in nature. And if you look up again how that Greek word is used in the word flesh, you'll find that it involves an uncontrolled nature of man, not unlike the behavior of an animal. It seems like that's when they talk about lust of the flesh and the word flesh, it's like an animalistic type of behavior. And what it's saying is, you know, an animal does what an animal does out of instinct. It's DNA. It does things the way God has made us. Well, sure, we have desires. We can have a craving. We can have something that gets stirred up within us that is forbidden or not lawful, but we're different than an animal because God gave us a part of Him, and that we have the ability to control ourselves and not give in to that type of desire. But you know what? The world acts. See, the world and this lust of the flesh, when we think about the way the word world is being used, when the world is confronted with the lust of the flesh, then it just acts upon it. It's nothing more than a feeling. And you just go with the way that you feel. If it feels right or good, then how could it be wrong? You see how that's the way the world behaves. And you can see what kind of a mess it makes in people's lives when they don't adhere to passages like this, where we're told that the love of the world is that we have this lust of the flesh. Well, we're confronted daily. We're confronted daily with the lust of the flesh. We're confronted daily with the fleshly appetites. It may be entertainment. You know, for some people, it's the happy hour of intoxication. Isn't it interesting that the world calls it, at this time after work, it's called happy hour, when you can go and be happy. Well, what are we doing? We're masking the reality of intoxication and what the Bible condemns. We can desire fleshly things of life that are contrary to the Father. And when we do that, that's very selfish. That's very self-serving in our thoughts and feelings. And so those feelings drive the moment. They drive the moment. Maybe in sexual relationships outside of the marriage bed, or the intoxication which inhibits one's control over their actions. Now you're saying things, you're doing things, you're getting behind a wheel. Before you know it, you're in the paper for drunk driving, or you've been arrested, or you've actually killed somebody or hit somebody in a wreck. Why? Because again, you're giving in to this idea of the fleshly desires. Well, what's the best way to confront this lust of the flesh? Well, I thought of Colossians chapter 3. If you'll turn over to Colossians chapter 3, this is a good chapter to remember from the standpoint of if you want to know some things to put off, but also know some things to put on, this passage does that for us. Colossians chapter 3 and verse 5 says this. It says, "Therefore, put to death your members which are on the earth, fornication, uncleanness, passion, evil desire, and covetousness, which is idolatry." So even covetousness, and we can think of the works of the flesh in Galatians chapter 5 versus the work of the Spirit, the fruit of the Spirit. But here we see, well, you got to put to death these things. You've got to literally put them out of your life. So how do we do that? Well, I think that's why the second part goes on. If you go down a little further in verse 10, he says, "And have put on the new man who is renewed in knowledge according to the image of him who created him." So what do? Well, you got to put on a new man, a new way of thinking. Well, there's a lot of passages that teach us a lot of good things to replace these strong desires with the good versus the evil. So when we desire, when the flesh desires and that arises, it's best to redirect our affections towards the Father and not towards the world. So maybe that means that what we do is we change physical locations, we slow down, we stop and think. We may need to walk away from situations, and we shut these things down so we don't come in conflict with the love of the Father versus the love of the world. The second thing that he mentions here is the lust of the eyes. So obviously our craving here, or our strong desire, is excited by things that the eyes take in. This can be someone of the opposite sex. It may be the lure of a luxurious home, or maybe the lifestyle that someone has. You may not be tempted with things like this, but there are people that, yes, it's the kind of car you drive, it's where you live. With Eve in the garden, it came down to the fruit of a forbidden tree, that when she looked at it, she saw that it was good. It was good to Eve's eyes. And so she physically saw what God had forbidden, and it looked good to her. But it was the wrong type of desire because God had forbid it. So the world wears things that incite the opposite sex. It stirs up lustful thoughts and desires. Unfortunately, adultery has become very commonplace now among God's own people. You hear about it very often. Maybe it's a preacher, and I've heard of situations where a preacher has had relationships with several members in the congregation. It may be that happens, or these two couples just switched husbands and wives. They just flip things around. There is online pornography that I've sat through all kinds of lessons on this, and there is so much to be concerned about and aware of. where it's being used not only by men, but women of the Lord's church. And it's presenting all kinds of problems and challenges for elders and for preachers and for congregations and problems in the home between the husband and the wife. You know, David sinned when he failed to look away. Here was a woman that was bathing herself up on a roof, and he did not look away. And then you've got Job in Job chapter 3 and verse 11. He said, I made a covenant with my eyes to not look upon a young maiden, to not look upon the young woman. In Job chapter 31 and verse 1. And so again, we're talking about these are desires, these are things that we have, but we must have control over them. Sometimes something quickly catches our eyes, but we have to learn to quickly look away. The Bible talks about, Peter talks about girding up the loins of our mind and bringing our eyes under our control. And that's what we're talking about. And so we've got to sometimes, again, we've got to go in a different direction. And again, it may be that I'm getting all, like, I got to have a better house. I got to have a better phone. I got to have a this. I got to have a that. So how much do you need to think about contentment and being what's really important? So again, there's choices that we make that revolve around the lust of the eyes and the things that catch our attention, the things that we look at, and we must bring that under control. And then the third thing that he says is the pride of life, the pride of life. Well, while the lust of the flesh focuses on what feels right, and the lust of the eyes focuses upon what looks good, the pride of life directs one's thoughts and actions upon how I look. How's this going to make me look? And so that's where the ego or the pride or the haughtiness of heart is elevated. And for Eve, if we go back to the garden, and you're aware that when we go back to the garden, we can see where all three of these are present. But for Eve, it was when Satan began to tell her, you know what, if you'll eat of this, it'll make you be like God. And you'll know good and evil. Well, what was that appealing to? That was appealing to her nature of who she was, and that somehow maybe even God was withholding something from them. Well, we may be more concerned about our life than the lives of others. And this one, again, I don't know if I preach on this too much or what, but it seems like it comes up in a lot of lessons where, again, where is my focus? Is my focus upon myself or is it upon others? And so if you turn to Philippians, you should be pretty close to Philippians chapter 2, verse 3 and 4. How do you combat this pride of life? Well, understand that it leads to destruction, a haughty spirit. It is in Proverbs chapter 6 is one of the, actually, it's the first thing. God hates a proud look of things that he abhors. That's the first one that's mentioned. But if you want to combat this, is how do I deal with this? Well, verse 3, let nothing be done through selfish ambition or conceit, but in lowliness of mind let each esteem others better than himself. Let each of you look out not only for his own interest, but also for the interest of others. And so, again, where is my focus? Now, these three things are of the world, and they're not of the Father. And the loving of the things of the world means that we don't love the Father. So we're not talking about something that's not very serious, because I can claim to love Jesus, but Jesus said, well, if you love me, you keep my commandments. So if I'm not keeping his commandments, then that says I don't love him. Well, if I and have my affections, desires that are very earthly and directed towards the earth and this life, the temporal type of things, and not the spiritual, then what I'm saying is that, yeah, I really don't love the Father. I love the world more. So as we say, our actions speak louder than words. Look at verse 17. I'm back in our text now, verse 17. And the world is passing away, and the lust of it. These things are just temporary. They're not going to last. So if all of my lust and my cravings and my desires, or the inflation of myself, if that's where I'm at in life, then I need to understand that that's not going to last. There's nothing eternal about that. It will pass away. So homes will pass away. And if I'm counting on my looks, then my looks will pass away in this life. But it's not our looks or our riches, our bank accounts. It's not our homes. That's not the things that are eternal. That's not the things that are going to get us to dwell with God. But notice also there in verse 17, and the world is passing away in the lust of it, but he who does the will of God abides forever. That's individual accountability. Individual accountability. Whoever does the will of God abides forever. And so that, of course, we understand I brought a lesson not long ago, we'll each stand before the judgment seat of Christ. We're each going to give account of the things that we have done, whether good or evil. And so that there's an individual accountability when it comes to John's question. Now, I don't want to pass away with the world and the things of the world. I want to, and you want to, of course, abide forever. But how do we do that? Well, we do the will of God. Do you see in that even the two options? We either do the will of God or we don't do the will of God. It's I don't know why there's this. We like to have that gray area. It's like, well, that's just, I don't know if that soothes the conscience or what, but God has a will, and it's something that we can know and we should practice. And to somehow say, well, he's got a will, but, you know, it's kind of muddy and there's a lot of gray area. Well, that just kind of leaves it up to you do your thing and I'll do my thing. But that's not the way the Bible is. So do we seek the world and love the world, or do we intend to abide forever? Because, again, these are choices that we make, and the choice is mine and the choice is yours. It's not left up to anyone else. Even in as close as I am to Lisa, it's still an individual thing, isn't it? Now, I'm judged as a husband. She's judged as a wife. And we're judged according in our marriage. But when it comes to accountability, we each understand that there is individual accountability even in that relationship as well. I mentioned not long ago, it doesn't matter what congregation you're a part of as far as, you know, well, I always went to this congregation. Well, that doesn't mean that when you stand before the Lord that, or I preach the gospel. Well, if I didn't preach the gospel right, or I had sin in my life, well then, you know, I'm in danger of eternal damnation just as much as anybody else. So John gives us how the things of the world are only temporary, and it is those that abide by the will of God that will abide forever. Again, that's a choice that we each must make. You might be here this morning and you need to obey the gospel of Jesus Christ. We stand ready to help you to do that. There is water ready behind me that you can be baptized and you can wash your sins away. Not because it's something that I say, but it's because it's what the Bible teaches. The Apostle Paul, Saul of Tarsus, was told what he must do, and he was told to rise and be baptized and wash away your sins. You may want to do that. You may need to do that this morning. You need to do that before it's everlastingly too late. We also extend an invitation that if you're a Christian and maybe your affections have been misdirected, maybe you have a love for the world and you're realizing that your focus and your aim hasn't been in the direction that it needs to be. You may need to confess that because it's sin. You may need to ask for prayers that we can encourage you and help you, because we want all of us here to one day be around the throne of God. If we can help anyone in any way, we invite you to come as we stand and sing.